Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, everybody, to Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, performance enhancement expert, and author, Sean Douglas. I want to welcome everybody who's listening from around the world. This show is currently heard in over 44 countries, such as the U.S., India, Canada, France, Belgium, Australia, Panama, New Zealand. So I want to thank you to those who's joined us from wherever you are. Now, Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformations. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight those transformational moments that changed our lives and how we use these to help transform others and elevate their lives as well. Now, you can listen to us every Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time and also on the first and third Fridays at the very same time. Now, this is a live show if you're joining us on those times. It is a live show, so if you have a question for the guest, you can dial us in at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. So if you have a question for any of our guests during our live broadcast, you can give us a holler and we'll get you on the show. I got a team standing by fielding questions. You can join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community. That's our community on Facebook, Life Transformation Radio Community. On the show, I have impactful and amazing guests that are impacting everyone around them. And my guest today does exactly that. He is a great friend and someone who, you know, him and I have been working together on some things. And the guy that you're going to meet today is going to blow your mind. The guy is absolutely phenomenal. Speaker, author, and you got to hear from this guy. So welcome to the show, Roger Ramsuk. What is up, buddy?
Hey, man. Good to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me, Sean.
Dude, I'm super pumped to have you on the show, man. We've been talking for some time, you know, working together on some things. And, dude, it's just like the things that you know inside of what you do, like in your zone of genius, I think is so super powerful that everybody needs to know this. And one of the words that I instantly was drawn to because of the work that I do is cognitive behavioral therapy. Like, holy crap. All right. Yeah. I'm already hooked. You know, like, yeah. I'm already there, you know? So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we met at New Media Summit in San Diego last year. And, yeah, take it away, man. Tell us about yourself.
Well, you were one of the icons, and you had great ideas even among the other icons, and you were really well spoken. And I'm so glad that you've started advising me of sorts. That I think there's some really cool things to be done in the world, and I just love what you're doing and your mission with resilience, with some of the things you're trying to do in helping transform people and helping transform family. And I mean, that's my juice right there. I mean,
yeah.
We both see the need in today's society. We both see the need in education. We both see the need in parenting and in families to get our kids in alignment with some of the core values that really, it doesn't matter what generation you're in, certain things ring true, certain things stand the test of time, and success breeds success. Not because of some fatty, gimmicky kind of, oh, let's go use this kind of, email system, or let's go use this funnel thing. It's about some of the core principles. And man, when you learn these yourself, when you teach your kids these, I mean, that is what's going to make a difference in business, in the home, in the family, in transforming lives, in improving your country in the United States, my country in Canada. I mean, this is where it's at. And so much of this stuff is being lost. So much of this stuff is being forgotten. So much of this stuff is being poo-pooed under political correctness, under, let's try something new. Forget this old crap over here. You've got to reach people in the new day and age. It's like, you know what? I'm all for technology. I'm all for trying new stuff. But, man, don't forget what works. Don't forget how to teach kids the right way right from the start. And that is being forgotten.
Yep.
And, I mean, I know that you and I are very much in alignment with this kind of message. So I know I'm kind of preaching to the choir there.
It's all good, man. It's all good. So the title of this episode is titled The Fearless Parent with Roger Ramczuk. Roger is an author, speaker, and therapist. He has worked with people that exhibit problem behaviors for over 15 years. He has worked extensively with individuals with autism spectrum disorder, developmental delays, mood disorders, and a wide range of people who are stuck in some aspect of their life. He has worked frontline with the hardest to serve populations in group homes and government-run institutions, as well as consulting to a wide range of organizations, including schools, hospitals, private clinics, group homes, and private homes. He has taught conflict resolution to HR departments, created safety plans, and taught crisis intervention for at-risk patients in hospitals and group homes. He is certified in cognitive behavioral therapy, applied behavioral analysis, crisis intervention, and he is the award-winning author of the book, The Fearless Parent, 20 Ways to Inspire Success, Respect, and Gratitude. And he has an upcoming book titled Authentic Life, Infinite Abundance, Creating Abundance Through Discovering Your Authentic Purpose. Love it. He has spoken nationally and internationally and uses his passion, knowledge, and relatability to increase his audience's knowledge and engage them on a personal level. After experiencing his own challenges professionally, he embarked on a journey to find his authentic self and realized how interconnected the inner journey is to outside achievement. He now guides others in their own journey of moving past their own setbacks and self-imposed limits to live lives that fulfill them spiritually, emotionally, and physically. You can find out more about Roger at www.thefearlessparent.com. You can also go to secondauthenticlife.com. So thefearlessparent.com. And then secondauthenticlife.com. Dude, you in your bio, like you, geez almighty, man, you are crushing it. Like, I'm reading it like, yes, yes, Roger.
I hadn't actually realized there's quite a bit on there, but.
You never do until someone reads your bio, like before I go on stage, right? You know what I'm talking about? Like before you go on stage, you're like, who are they talking about? That guy's awesome. Who are they talking about? You know, we don't really, I mean, that's kind of like we're in the same cloth, man. Like we're super humble, you know? We're not like, ooh, look at me, you know, like people read our stuff and like, jeez almighty, like, yeah, if somebody tells you, like, I know they tell you, like, you got a lot going on, like, you do a lot of stuff, like, oh, no, it's fine, not really, and then somebody looks at it and goes, you do a lot of stuff, like, I kind of do, crap, so, no, I mean, I think you're a rock star, man, I think you're awesome.
Thank you, right back at you, too, man, making it happen.
You know. So the first question I always ask the guests on the show, and I feel like is the most important question that you must ask, is why? Like, why is it that you do what you do? So that's my question to you, Roger. What is your big why? Why do you do what you do?
Yes, absolutely. And I think for a number of people that are in this realm, it comes from a very personal place, and I am no exception in that. I've always known inside me that I was not going to have a traditional job in the sense of Monday to Friday doing something, climbing the ladder, within an organization, impressing bosses and doing my best. Inside, I didn't think that was me. I knew that I would do something different, but I didn't know what it was. And I went through all throughout school getting really good grades, being one of those people that are, you know, voted like most likely to achieve, blah, 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 blah. And went to university, not really because I wanted to go, because I didn't think that was where I should be, to be honest with you. But I didn't know anything else. And growing up in my household, my dad, my mom were like, you're going to become a doctor, you're going to become a lawyer. That's the only two options. Okay, maybe we'll accept engineer. But that was it. And I went into university fully. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying that sounds great.
Well, yeah, it did, except that wasn't me. And it took me completing my degree. It took me completing my degree in psychology at the end of it all to realize that, I knew about halfway through that law wasn't for me. And I had to be honest with myself. I wasn't smart enough to become a doctor, much to the disappointment of my parents. But doctors are just a different breed, I think. And if I'd studied and killed myself, maybe I could have got there. But it wouldn't have been worth it in the end, in terms of the stress, in terms of what I had to do in order to get there. And I guess in the end, it wasn't meant for me. It wasn't my calling. And about halfway through university or so, I realized that lawyers fight for a living. They argue for a living, and that's not what I wanted to do. I try to bring harmony and peace to people. And that's how I kind of fell into psychology, because I realized that that is what I've been really good at all my life, is helping people through some of their issues and some of their problems. I was that guy in university or in school where if you broke up with your boyfriend and girlfriend, you came to talk to me. And I would help you through that kind of thing. That was me. That was that guy. And I realized that I have a passion for this. But I subjugated all that and still tried to go into the working world working for a boss. And I always say I was dragged kicking and screaming into the world of entrepreneurship, because I kept taking these jobs just to pay bills and to make a living. And then, you know, to pay a mortgage and all that other stuff. And I'm doing all these jobs just to do what I got to do, as opposed to what I should be doing. And the result of that, and you know, to answer your question a little more quickly, is that I was fired from, I think, 12 jobs or 11 jobs over the course of my almost 20-year working career.
Wow.
And I mean, yeah. And I mean, I held multiple jobs, because like I've always worked two, sometimes three jobs pretty much my whole life. So it doesn't actually work out to like one every other year like that, but some of those jobs were run concurrently. But still, I realized that, and I always say this, I'm psychologically unsuited to having a boss. And my boss came to realize that. they came to realize that kind of early on. But I was really good at the things that I put myself to do most of the time. Now, sometimes flat out I sucked. Absolutely. My heart wasn't in it. My mind wasn't in it. And you know, there are times that I deserved to be fired for sure. But I'd say the majority of the time was just like random stuff happening where I would lose a job. Like, for instance, you know, the facility shut down and got absorbed by another company, or the government took it over and then fired half their staff, and like really weird stuff. And I realized that after the last time that I was fired, and this time I was fired for an absolutely ludicrous reason, and I'm sitting there almost disbelief saying, how did I get fired from this job that, A, I was really, really good at? I didn't really like, to be honest with you, but I was really good at it nonetheless, because I was thinking, even when I was doing the job, I need to be doing this for myself. Like, what am I doing it for? What am I doing it for this school board for? Right? And making somebody else reap all the benefit of my knowledge and my experience and everything else. And I was kind of resentful of the fact that I had to do this for somebody else. Well, I don't know if it was me manifesting an outcome or if it was what you want to call the universe talking to me, but I was fired from that job, even though I was like really, really good at it and going above and beyond. You know, you hear this thing about, oh, if you want to succeed, give more than expected value and give everything you got and then some.
Yep.
And man, that's what I was doing. And I still got fired, and I'm like, okay, what is going on here? And as I'm sitting there in my study that night, and my wife comes home and says, you know, like, what happened? And I told her the story. She says very plainly and very succinctly something that I'd come to, a conclusion that I'd come to a little bit earlier in that evening, was that, you know what, maybe this is God telling me I need to be doing my own thing. I need to be impacting lives on a greater scale than just one-on-one in, say, a classroom. And so my wife pretty much echoed that, saying, you know what, maybe this is God telling you, dummy, yet again, that you should be doing your own thing. I've thought this about you for since I've known you. And so it was because of that that I embarked on this journey of, A, self-discovery, and, B, just kind of figuring out what is that thing that I should be doing. What is that thing that I'm called to do? And, man, that is such a profound question that I think entrepreneurs especially ask themselves.
Yeah,
I don't think a lot of the population outside of that really ask themselves that question. Like, what am I supposed to be doing? What am I called to do? What is the thing that juices me, that drives my passion? I think a lot of people, and I speak to lots, I think thousands of people, and I'd say the majority of them kind of fell into the work that they're doing, and they didn't do it by design. And it's only in a moment of crisis, when they've been fired or they've been let go or the company shuts down or something, that this immense self-examination occurs, much as it did with me, where you start to say, what exactly am I doing with my life? How is it that I'm waking up a 40-something or 50-something or 60-something-year-old and saying, is this what my 20-something-year-old self envisioned for me? Like, is this really all that I have to do with my life? And it is that profound question that drives me to now help other people and help other kids who I think more than ever are a little, let's say, confused with where they should be in life or what they should be doing or what they're called to do. And I think more than ever, there's so many options open to kids now, and technology plays such a role in this whole dynamic of can work from home. You can start an online business. You can be an internet entrepreneur. But, man, you could do all those things, but why are you doing it? And so, you know, your very first question is so profound on so many levels, in that, why are you doing it? What is your why? And for me, my why is, man, I see a need in society, in kids, of people, and of parents who lack direction and how to help their kids, and how to create success, and how to teach them some of the success principles that they know, but maybe they don't even know how to teach, and maybe they don't know how to convey it to the kids because the kids don't even want to listen to them. And so my why stems from my personal mission of let's help people to find what they should be doing with themselves and bloody excel at it.
Yeah. So what would you say? So we on this show we talk about the why. And then we talk about the transformational moment that has changed our life into what we're doing and then how we're helping everybody. So, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving got started because, you know, the mother, you know, his daughter was killed by a drunk driver. So that's how they got started. A lot of people become like, I'm a suicide survivor, you know, and so now, you know, I'm a suicide awareness trainer, you know, in the military, because you know, I try to take my life, and a lot of people I find that, you know, they're sexual assault advocates because they were sexually assaulted or raped, or they do jobs because of their experience, and their transformational moment derives from that. So, you know, so what would you say is your transformational moment, that one decision, that one moment, that whatever it was that said, okay, I can't keep living this way. This is what I need to do. And then we go do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say a defining moment was the last time that I was fired from my job. But even before that, there was this moment as I'm going to these seminars and learning about entrepreneurism and learning about, let's say, positive thinking and about getting up when you've been knocked down and about how wealthy people think. And I'm sitting there in this seminar that I've paid, I think it was $1,500 for.
Wow.
And I'm looking at these speakers and listening to them speak, and then I'm reflecting on what is in my bank account. And in my bank account at the time, I had less than $800 in there. And I'm like, you know, everybody says you got to take that leap. You got to have that leap of faith, and you got to make things happen. And bloody hell,
right.
With my last like $2,000 or so in my bank account, here I am. Spending $1,500 thinking that I'm going to make this thing happen with this course, and boom, nothing happened. Actually, a little bit of a scam. I'm going to not names or anything like that, but
yeah.
It was one of those real estate type things where you go in and all they do is they spend 3 days telling you about things that don't apply in your province or in your state, and then they try to upsell you on a $45,000 program. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? This is what I spent the money on. So,
ouch.
I'm thinking, yeah, ouch, exactly. But I'm thinking, there's a lot of thinking here. There's a lot of mindset work here that really resonates with me. And why is it resonating with me? Is because I'm searching, and I'm a really educated guy, and I'm still searching. And I'm thinking, how many people out there don't even have as much on the ball as I do? And some of those people are much more successful than I, and many of them are much more successful than I am because their thinking is straight. But then how many people don't achieve what they truly believe in their heart is possible for them, that they're capable of, that they desire have, that they desire to have? How many people are like that? And that is what kind of started me on – it started with the question of, you know, like every good entrepreneur journey just starts with, you know, a good question. How can I serve this person? What is the need out there? How can I fill that need? Do I have the skills, or can I attain the skills to fill that need? And my transformation started kind of with that question, to say, how many people out there are in need of that kind of direction or in need of that kind of thinking in order to transform? Let's say, ready to jump into entrepreneurism yet, but fast forward a couple of years later, and I've been fired from my job yet again. And as I've been fired, I'm thinking to myself, okay, God, I get it. You're trying to tell me something.
Mm-hmm.
I should follow my dream. I should follow my heart. And you know, when I speak about this, one of my key phrases I say is that, you know, in these moments of crisis, it is that crisis that defines you, because either you stand up or you fall down and you stay down. And some people fall down and they get back up no matter what. And I mean, those are the stories that make me, I say, bawl my eyes out when I hear them. You know, like, that touches my heart, that touches my mind,
right.
That touches my soul. When I hear people that, man, that just, they're on the brink and they bring it back. And that is a transformation. You know, it's such
right.
a powerful, powerful word for me. And that's why I love what you do, because, man, that is the thing that I look at people that I say, you know what, when God takes you to that crisis, he takes you there to make you. Will you let him take you there? You know, will you let him bring you through it, right? Do you go on faith in God and faith in yourself? You know, or do you listen to that negative nattering of those negative noise out there who say you're not supposed to be doing this? That's why these things happen to you. It's like, you know what? Damn you.
Yeah.
I will make myself.
So,
I will make my destiny.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, I'm totally feeling what you're saying, man. You know, we just got to make it happen no matter what. You know what I mean? And you become a master of meaning. You know, everything I believe that everything that we're going through is preparing us for where we're going to. Now, wherever that destination is, you know.
Yeah.
So if I wouldn't have tried to take my life, then I wouldn't have a powerful testimony. If I wouldn't have become a drill instructor for basic training in the Air Force, then I wouldn't know how to tell my testimony. And then after that, those 4 years were done and I refined my skills, if I didn't go into the resilience program, and become a resilience trainer and speaker and like all that stuff, then I wouldn't have a platform to tell my testimony. So everything had to happen in the way that it happened, you know. And I
exactly.
tell people that you're let the test be your testimony and the mess be your message, you know.
Yeah,
when I'm
so cool.
And we've talked extensively about this, you know, and you know, talking about your speeches and things that we have going on in our lives, you know, it's like man, you know, let the test be your testimony, you know, that's what you're talking about, but the mess, that's your message to people, you know. And that, and you know I love this show. You know, we talk about the transformation because I believe that everybody has either gone through or will go through some kind of transformational moment in their life. So now we talked about the why, we talked about the transformational moment. Now let's put it all together. What kind of work, or how do you work with, you know, with, you know, autism and developmental delays and the mood disorders and you know, how do you hold workshops, right? So, I mean, so if I have a couple of kids, which I do, and am I having some kind of behavioral issues, or I'm having a discipline problem, or like what makes me want to work with Roger?
The work that I did with autistic individuals with autism or depression or anxiety or cognitive delays of some sort, or people with acquired brain injury, it is all based upon evidence-based scientific approaches of behaviorism, a holistic approach, a little bit of cognitive behavior therapy. I mean, all of this together creates a change in a person depending on where they are and where they need to be. And it was from working with kids with autism that I came to learn the deep down benefits of how to deal in a systematic way with challenging behavior. And it was from that I developed different techniques and systems in order to kids who are, as they say, neurotypical or normal kids, who are just having a tough time in school or maybe having a difficult time with their parents at home. And that's where my journey came from with that. And that's why people come in to my workshops, because it is about learning some of the key elements and how to work with a child without triggering anger. Or without triggering that knee-jerk reaction sometimes. It's all about a process. And a lot of times when I coach parents in workshops, either that are entrepreneurs or that are just regular parents looking to how to parent their kid better, it's the same principles in the end, in that parenting shouldn't be a knee-jerk reaction. And, I mean, it's so easy to say this in a nice, safe environment like this conversation that we're having in a studio, that it is so hard to do, and I recognize it's so hard to do in real life, because life is messy, and there are times that you are tired, there are times that you're frazzled, when you've got a million competing things going on, and then the kid comes with you and says that you have to take me to this practice, and I forgot my soccer shoes at home, and blah 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 blah, and that's when you lose your cool one, and then I so get it. But one of the key principles I talk about is have a plan in place for how you do things, and it shouldn't be up to you all the time. It should be you investing time initially in parenting your child and teaching them to govern themselves. And I think especially nowadays, there's so many parents that want to be and do everything for the kids instead of letting them figure their own stuff out. And there's such value, I say, in the struggle. And I'll give you a quick example.
Yep.
There's so many kids that I work with that they don't know how to tie their shoes. And I'm like, you're 9 years old. Why don't you know how to tie your shoes? This is like a really basic thing that you should learn in kindergarten. And what did the parents do? They tried a couple of times to teach them how to tie their laces for shoes. Or they bought them those shoes with the curly laces where you just pull them on and the laces curl up on themselves. And I'm like, this is a prime example right here. How about teaching the child that, you know what, you didn't get it the first time, you didn't get it the second time, you didn't get it the third time, you're going to keep trying until you get it, because this is a skill that you should know. This is a very basic thing that you should know. And giving them the easy out of Velcro straps, like, are you freaking kidding? At the very basic level, if you can't master this, if you don't build a resilience, and I know this is a big word with you, Sean, if you don't build a resilience of getting through shoelace tying, how the heck are you going to manage when you get when you fail that first test, or when you get turned down to making the basketball or soccer team or football team? How are you going to face it when you get your heart trampled on by your first love? How are you going to face it when you don't get into college or university, your choice? Like, how are you going to face all of those things if you can't bloody face the disappointment of not tying your shoes? And why are your parents coddling this behavior in you by not letting you figure your stuff out for yourself and insisting you're going to figure it out and you are going to build that mental muscle, right? It starts from stupid, basic stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right?
And yeah, definitely.
It is from there that you build these building blocks. And I mean, I know, again, I mean, that's why, you know, I love talking to you, because our message is so in alignment in terms of you're going to go through the struggle and you're going to be a better person for it. You're going to be a stronger person for it. You just got to stick with it, and you're going to overcome. It's basic stuff like that that I talk in my workshops about it. But there's a systematized way of doing this, and a lot of it starts with you're going to parent ahead of the curve, not behind the curve. And parenting behind the curve means that knee-jerk reaction. It means that I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what the hell to do with you. Now I'm going to yell at you or do whatever. As opposed to, what's the consequence for this behavior? You're supposed to be in at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. It's now almost 2. What's the consequence of your behavior? If your kid can't say, I mean, they're not going to like it, but if they can't say, I know the consequence is I no TV or no Xbox for the next 2 weeks or blah, 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 blah. If they don't know whatever that predetermined consequence is, you failed as a parent, because they should know the consequence even as they're breaking the rule. And if they choose to break the rule, I mean, then you can't govern them every single freaking second of the day. But you can set the expectation ahead of time and saying, you knew the consequences, you did it anyway. Now face the music the same way that an adult does, right?
You know, you know, my mom, she'd be like, if you do that again, and she kept saying it like over and over and over and over and over again. And my sisters and I, as we grew up, I'm like, really? Like, I think they, I don't know, at least my 15-year-old, I think he tries to test. I know he does. I know for a fact he tries to do, at least I think he does. But it's like I say something, and it's just like I got, like, deer in the headlight look. I could be like, hey, trash is full. That's your job. I need you to take it out. He just stares at me. I'm like, hello. He's like, what? I'm like, what do you mean, what? He's like, what? I'm like, take the trash out. He's like, oh. I'm like, what the? What just happened? Like, I was speaking Spanglish or something, you know? Like, oh, my God. But I think that, you know, as – oh, man. I can just so many times remember – my mom screaming at us, you know, and we're just like, I don't know what she's talking about. And then my kids start doing the same thing, and I'm like, I wonder if they know what I'm talking about. Like, you know, but we're pretty strict on don't do that. Don't do that. Like, if you test me one more time, and you're going, you know, to your room, or, I mean, we don't just smack our kids around and have belts. And like, I grew up with that crap. We don't do that stuff. You know, we have, like, I'll make them write 500 times, you know, why they got in trouble, you know? Like, it doesn't bother me. Make them stand in a corner or sit in a chair, you know, whatever. My son hates sitting on the couch, not doing anything. Like, I make him sit on his hands, and he hates it. He's like, can I get up? I'm like, no, you can sit there and just stare at nothing. And he hates it. My daughter hates going to her room. She never wants to be in a room. She wants to be with around people. She wants to be around us, whatever. So if I tell her to go to your room, she's but, and yeah, she's got toys in there, but she hates it, you know? So I will take
the truth.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Like, I'll take the Xbox cord, but not the Xbox. So you can stare at the game, but you can't play it.
So close, but so far.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, the game's right there, you know, but I took the power cord. You know, so talk about effective ways to discipline your child. I think that, you know, we've gotten to this culture where, like, my pastor in church during his sermon will say something to the effect of, you know, God this and this, and, you know, we're talking about our sermon and this, that, and he's like, and sometimes your kids get out of line, they get out of, you know, they get out of whack, and we know that you don't spank your kids. Oh, we know. I'm like, Pastor, you can't say that. You know, it's so funny. But, like, we don't spank our kid. Like, I don't know. I guess when they're, like, four. Like, we have a three-year-old, and we might swat her on the butt or something. But, like, we don't, like, you know, put them through a wall, you know, and get belts and, like, all that stuff. You know what I mean? But we do have, I believe, effective discipline where it's like, I told you no. And I really don't like to yell, but, like, oh, I get so mad sometimes. So talk about effective ways that parents can discipline their child but still have that gratitude and respect for each other.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I'm chuckling to myself as I listen to you tell me about your son, because I got two things to say about that in relation to your question. One is it's okay for them to test. I like when they test because they should test, because it's painful as a parent. But let me tell you, it is that kind of unwilling to accept an answer that leads to success later on in life, right? Like, if as an entrepreneur, if you took no, every time you pitch something, right? Every time you spoke to somebody and they said, no, thank you. I mean, if you accepted that, you'd close a lot fewer sales. And if you said, well, okay, that's interesting. I can see, okay, you don't want it. That's fine. But can I ask why? Do you not see the value in it? Do you not think I can help you? Do you not think blah, blah, blah? And pursuing the no as opposed to just accepting it, right? So one of the things I say right off the bat is I like kids of spirit, as painful as that growing process may be, okay? Because if you come from, and I know several people like this, and I was kind of raised like this too, in that you did not talk back, you barely raised an eyebrow. Like, if when dad was in his, he looked at and he was yelling at you, if you looked him in the eye, that was like challenging, that was like confrontational. It's like, how dare you look at me when I'm yelling at you? You cast your eyes to the floor in shame, young man, that kind of thing, right?
Wow, yeah.
That kind of parenting breaks somebody's spirit. And that is never what I want for anybody. Right? So, as much as it's painful, and it's never pleasant to go through it, but the other side of it is that, man, that is building a certain type of thinking that you want to foster in your kids for future success, because they have to test the limits. They need to, if they want to succeed, they need to question the status quo. And it is those people who question the status quo, man, those are the ones that create some of the most life-changing medicines, life-changing technologies, life-changing anything in this world. The ones that question the status quo. I mean, that's the foundation that Steve Jobs built the entire Apple empire on, was I challenge the status quo. That's practically the mission statement. That is an mission statement, right?
Wow. So interesting. So interesting foster, perspective.
Yeah. So foster that in the extent of not breaking their spirit. Now, having said that, they should also know what the rules are, because the fact of the matter is we live in a rule-governed society. And even if they work for themselves, there are still people that they have to listen to. Government regulators, etc. There are still plenty of people whose rules they have to follow in order to become successful, in order to build success in life. And so they need to be taught that this is the value of the rule and this is the consequence for it. So I love when I hear parents say, I know that you don't like this, and so this is going to be part of your punishment if you choose to disobey me. And if you choose to disobey me, fine. You know, I mean, like, I can't force your hand. I'm not going to go out searching for you to find out why you're not coming home at curfew, blah, 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 blah. But when you walk through that door, like little miss, little sir, right? There will be a consequence, mm-hmm. and that consequence is going to be something you don't like. So let me tell you, when you are clear and consistent in your message, the kid is not going to like it. But let me tell you, there's respect there. And so don't confuse being liked with being respected. They're two very, very different things. And so many parents that I speak to who usually have spoiled brat kids who I have to go and deal with are fall into this trap where I want my child to be my friend. I want to have a friendly relationship with them. I want them to be able to tell all their juicy secrets.
Ooh.
Like, you know what? You are not their bloody girlfriend or buddy. Okay?
Right.
You are the parents. Understand the freaking difference between the two. I'm all for having harmony with your child, but not at the expense of I am an authority because I am your parent. And don't ever freaking forget that.
Right.
There is respect in being clear with your message. There is respect earned, even if it's grudgingly. There is respect earned when you are absolutely crystal clear in who you are and what your expectations are for yourself and for them. Which brings me to my next
point.
If you want to inspire your child to be great, then be great yourself. And by that, one of the chapters in my book, build the behavior that you want to see. And so and this is going to sting a little, given your last comments to me, your example to me with your son, but it's actually, I actually have this written in my book, so I'm not making it up right now just to zing you a little bit. It's actually written ahead of time that one of the examples in my book is, you know, if you ask your child to take out the garbage and you have to ask 3 or 4 times, you know, examine your behavior. When your wife asks you to paint the garage or to fix the closet or to mow the lawn, whatever it may be, how many times does she have to ask you? And if you are honest with yourself and say, okay, maybe
well,
it had to be asked a couple of times, well, don't be hard on yourself, right?
Yeah, man. I was like, damn. Because, I mean, sometimes, you know, you get busy, you're doing things, you know, and it's no excuse, you know, and you and I, you know, entrepreneurs and speakers, I'm working on things, and hey, can you do this? And I'm like, give me 1 second, let me finish this thought, let me finish this email, let me finish this, you know, whatever. And I really have to be cognizant of, it's not about the email, it's about the relationship, it's not about mine, it's about her, and I really have to, like, slap myself verbally sometimes. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get up and do it, I'm going to, you know, whatever. And I'm just thinking, I'm like, there has been times where she's like, I need it now. Like, hello, I need this to happen. I'm like, fine. So I get up, I do it, you know, whatever. And then I go right back to the computer because I'm in the middle of rewriting something or I'm making a sales page or I'm on a deadline for something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Man. Crap.
Not crap.
Gotta be better at that.
The first step to changing anything is to recognize that it's happening, right? With awareness comes a change. So that's one of the things that I say is model the behavior that you want to see and truly examine what your own dynamic is. The next thing I say a lot of times is when you're looking at the behavior, how clear is your communication? And I'll give you a quick example. I'm with my... I'm at a birthday party for my nephew, and my nephew, near the end of the night, is playing a head-to-head Game Boy or something with his cousin, and my sister-in-law, she's getting ready to leave, and she says to her daughter, who's playing head-to-head with my nephew, she says, "Okay, it's time to go," and the girl says, 5 more minutes, mommy." And so, sorry, she doesn't say 5 minutes. She says 20 more minutes, mommy. And I'm getting ready to leave, but I sit back because I want to see what happens. Because I'm like, where does this little 9-year-old kid have the guts? Because not even 5 minutes, which, you know, would be typical.
You're like
she
analyzing
them. 24 minutes. Oh, yeah. I mean, I fall into this trap. I analyze behavior. I mean, that is what I do, right?
You're like, uh-oh, hold on. About to get WWE up in here. So what happened?
So I'm like, where did she get the guts to ask for 20 more minutes? And obviously I know what the answer is. The answer is that she's tried this many times and she's found that 20 minutes she can get away with. That's why she's trying it now. The mother says, fine, 20 more minutes. And the mother hasn't moved. She hasn't done anything. She's just sitting on the couch, really comfy with a glass of wine that she hadn't even finished, I might add. So really, does she have any interest in moving just yet? No, of course not. So 20 minutes goes by, and then it's probably more like 40 minutes later. The mother says, again, let's go. It's time to go. And the girl, her daughter, without even turning around, goes, 20 more minutes, mommy. And the mother turns and looks at me, looks at all of them, says, like, huh, well, like, what am I going to do? She doesn't listen to me. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, how about if, number one, you get off the couch and actually show like you are ready to go? Because obviously your actions up until now have not dictated that you were actually ready to go. So why are you even saying it? Why don't you just tell the child, we're going to get ready to go in 20 minutes, as opposed to it's time to go? Because it's not time to go, because you hadn't even finished your wine the first time. So that's the first one. Unclear communication there. The second time, the girl tries it again, and the mother shrugs her shoulders and says to us, like, you know, like, what am I going to do? She doesn't listen to me. Obviously, the mother has no intent behind her words, and nothing about her demeanor suggests that she's actually ready to go. If she actually wanted to get compliance, she should have stood up, walked over, said, hand me the Game Boy, stand up and go put on your coat. Very clear, very specific, very precise instructions that elicit action. When you say it's time to go, what does that mean? Does that mean stop what I'm doing? Does that mean start saying goodbye? Does that mean go give everybody a hug and a kiss? Does that mean finish your drink? Does that mean put on your coat? Does that mean walk out the door? What does it mean? It's like somebody saying, oh, boy, it's hot in here. What they really want to say is, can you open the window? Right? Say what you actually want to mean, because unfortunately for kids, they are very literal. Have you noticed this? You have to say exactly, oh, you want me to do it now. Oh, I thought you meant like sometime this week or something.
Sounds like my 15-year-old. You know? I'm like, hey, this needs to get done. And he's like, all right. And he goes back to playing his DS. And I'm like,
yeah,
but it needs to get done. And he's like, yeah, I know, I'll do it.
I'm like, oh, he'll do it.
Well,
exactly.
We'll do it now. I'm like, we'll do it now. He's like, oh, okay. And I'm like,
oh, now is something specific. Right?
Right?
Exactly.
I just look at myself. Exactly. I'm like, oh, stupid. And I know better. I know better. Because I literally tell people the same things you're saying. Like, you have to be definitive, and you have to do this, and you have to do this. And then I'm sitting here going, take out the trash, like, four times. But I didn't tell them, like, hey, this needs to happen. So I try to be real cognizant of that and say, hey, I need this done, like, right now. And I need this, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes I find myself, my wife will be like, hey, in a couple of minutes, like, I need you to come do this. And I'm like, all right. Like,
yeah.
All right, I fully expect, like, get up and do it now, you know, but she gives me a heads up. Like you were saying, like, hey, like, I'm thinking, I'm like, do I do that with my own kids? Do I turn around and go, hey, kids, we're getting ready to leave, so make sure you clean up, make sure you, hey, let's go, we got to go.
Because
I know for a fact, we do this before bed. I know for a fact, hey, guys, hey, get ready to get to bed, let's go, get ready, clean up your stuff, and hey, we got to go to bed, so get ready. Yeah. I wonder, do I do that when we're leaving the house, or do I do that, you know, in other times? I don't think I do.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it is so illuminating when, you know, an outside person can look in on your life a little bit and say, well, here's why that's happening, kind of thing, right? Because when you're in your own fog, it's foggy, right? Sometimes you have to be standing outside the fog in order to look at what you're doing. And it's usually... Yep. A really, you know, slap on the forehead, oh, duh, kind of moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's awesome. So tell me what was the inspiration of writing your book? Your book is called The Fearless Parent, 20 Ways to Inspire Success, Respect, and Gratitude. So what was the inspiration? What was the fuel to writing this book?
You know what? It is working with so many kids all these years, and watching the really poor way, and I'm going to use very nice language here and just say very poor way,
yes,
that parents parent. And they come to me, the parents who end up working, who I end up working with, who come seeking me, it's, they're usually at their wit's end. And I'm like, you don't have to wait till things are a bloody crisis in order to improve the way you're doing things with your child. And so I wrote the book as a kind of a means of being proactive to say, here, read the book instead of me telling you stuff and making it sound all bloody preachy. And instead of you coming to me when things are in crisis, read the book ahead of time and see if you can change some things without having to come to a workshop or without having to be in crisis. Be proactive about some of this stuff in parenting and in life, and just say, man, I work with your kids, and I hear how they speak, and I hear about the way you guys do stuff. And I just collected all of these stories and all of these principles, and I just put them into the book, and I just said, here is parenting, and I'm not going to call it the parenting manual because that's bullshit, because every kid is different, and every parent needs
right.
A plan that is customized to them for their own specific needs. But what I'm going to say is that there's certain general principles that everybody should follow, and then once you know those things, man, you make it work however that works in your dynamic with your child. Because I'm not so ignorant, and it is ignorant, and I'm not so naive, because it would be naive for me to say, you do these things and you're going to have a perfect kid. That's ignorant and naive. What I do say is that you read some of these principles and start applying them, and the relationship with your child and your child's relationship with themselves will improve 100%. So,
dude, I love it, man.
Yeah, thank you. It was just inspired to say, you know what? I'm sick and tired of seeing some really common sense stuff could be done so much better if only they knew what I knew. And so the book was intended to take some of what I know and just, you know, benefit from my 20 years of experience of working with your kid.
It's awesome. That's amazing. So for the guests that are listening, this is a live show. So you can call in at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. If you have a question for myself or for Roger, we're more than happy to field any questions that you might have on parenting and discipline and some other things. My team is standing by to field any questions, because sometimes people like to troll the shows, and we kind of want to weed those guys out. So a couple questions I got for you. What are some resources? I mean, your book obviously is the resource that people should go to, and they can also go to thefearlessparent.com and learn more about what you do and ways that they can, just become a better parent, really. I mean, just what it says, become a fearless parent, you know. But what are some of the resources how do people know that their child is autistic? And how do they know if they have a developmental delay or a mood disorder? Like how would I know any of this stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that a lot of times parents, especially if they're not a first-time parent, kind of notice that something is different in the way this one child is versus the others. And if they don't recognize it, believe it or not, sometimes it is something as simple as the aunts and uncles or some of the best friends say, you know, not meaning to insult you, but your child is, like, not responding to their name, right? Or they're not making eye contact with me, or, you know, some of the big stuff with autism specifically is they're not playing appropriately with toys. They don't respond to the name. They don't make eye contact. They don't like being touched. But they're sometimes, like, really good babies. Like, they don't cry. They don't excessively whine. They're quote-unquote good babies. And so the parents kind of fall into this false trap. But a lot of times the family physician will kind of start picking up on some of the stuff that there's something a little different here, or have you noticed such and such? And so as a parent, I just keep saying this over and over again, that be really in touch and in tune with how your child would respond to things. And if you find that that's a little weird, you know, you should have your antenna. Now, you shouldn't go all paranoid and say, oh my gosh, they should be saying their first words at X number of months, or they should have been walking at X number of months and not doing that. No, don't freak out. But start paying attention to certain mile markers of development to say, is something up here? Should I be concerned about this? And as soon as you're concerned, then take them to a professional, and your doctor probably has enough speech and language pathologists, developmental pediatricians, physical therapists, and such, that they can start to diagnose something are okay or something's not. Like, I'll give you a very good example, is one of my wife's good friends. Her son didn't speak until a year and a half, almost 2 years. And she was so worried, but she resigned herself. She says, you know what? My son is just never going to speak, and I'm okay with that. So she started teaching him sign language. And she took him to a speech language pathologist. She took him to the pediatrician, and everybody said, your child, there's nothing wrong with your child. He's just not ready to speak yet, but there's no reason why he wouldn't be. He shouldn't be speaking. Just give him more time. But she was like, okay, fine. He's just not going to speak, and I accept that because I want to be a good mom and I want to support him, so I'm going to teach him sign language. And so she started teaching him sign language, and he learned sign language before he learned how to speak. And I had to go to her one day and say, you know, he doesn't have to learn how to speak because he's getting his needs met by sign language. How about if you stop giving him what he wants for sign language and force him to say, if he wants an apple, say apple, as opposed to signing apple. Long story short, at just before 2 years of age, his first words, I'm not even joking, his first words was Waja, which was him trying to say my name. And his first words, and I tease his mother to this day about it, that his first words was my name, right? Because
that's awesome.
I had a fantastic rapport with him, and I encouraged him to, oh, you want the ball. Oh, you want the G.I. Joe. Oh, you want the Transformer. Then say man, say toy, say ball, say the color, say something, buddy.
Right?
And there was nothing wrong with him. And now you can't stop him talking, actually.
That's awesome.
So there's nothing wrong with there's nothing wrong with paying attention, but just don't go overboard is what I say.
Right. Yeah. So as we close the show, we're winding down. As we close the show, here's your shameless plug. We always do a shameless plug at the end. You can plug friends, quotes, websites, Facebook, products, movies, whatever it is that you want to plug and let people know about. This is your moment to shine. Shameless plug. Go.
That's wonderful. Let me just say this. I am jazzed. I get juiced by talking to parents and by connecting and hearing stories and helping them out. And not everything I do is just about for fee. I readily dispense free advice and work on people with certain scenarios. Now, when things get really involved, then of course there's going to be some kind of exchange of services there. But I love talking to people. So if you want to engage with me, one of the best ways is just email me, roger@thefearlessparents.com, or just go on my website, www.thefearlessparents.com, and connect with me there. And make sure you put in the .com, by the way, because if you put in something other than .com, you go to a whole other website. So it's thefearlessparents.com.
Yeah.
And or connect with me on Facebook. I'm Roger Ramsuk. The last name is R-A-M as in Mary, S-U-K-H. And connect with me on Facebook. Or I'm also on LinkedIn, same Roger Ramsuk on LinkedIn. And let me hear your story. Let me hear what's going on with you and what you loved and what you disagree with. Because, I mean, I hear lots of differing opinions by people saying, well, I don't think you should parent that way, or I don't think that's good because that doesn't work for my son or my daughter. Power to you. Power to you. Let me hear what your thoughts are on that, because it is amazing how for every rule, quote unquote, there's an exception to it and there's a case to be made for it. And I'm all for that.
Yeah.
So,
awesome, man.
Thank you very much for the show, Sean. This was wonderful.
Yeah, man, absolutely. So as we wrap up, can you deliver your best nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action?
Oh, wow, that's a tall order. What I typically say is, you know, in the end of it all, you don't have to know what the newest gaming platform is. You don't need to know the difference between what you need to know is what do you stand for? What is your belief? When you are clear in your mind about what your beliefs are and what you would like to see for your child, when you approach it with love and understanding and a firm mindset, man, you can transform any relationship. But it takes those three things: belief in what you value, a firm mindset, and a warm heart.
Awesome. A belief, a mindset, and a heart.
Yep.
I like it, man. Love it. So give us a call to action. As we close the show, what's our call to action? What should someone do today to set them up on the path of success and transformation?
Look at the behavior that you hate the most. Whatever that behavior is.
Look at what? You were breaking up for a second. You were starting to break up. Say that again.
Sorry. I said, look at the behavior that you dislike the most in your child, whatever that may be. And then first thing, what are my actions like? Do I do the same thing? And now I'm trying to tell my child to do something different from what I do. And number two, am I truly clear in how I'm communicating this? When you analyze those two things and you change the wording and the way you model that behavior, you will see a behavior change in your child. I almost guarantee it.
Perfect, man. I leave it right there. Leave it right there. Awesome. Where can they find you? Where should they go?
www.thefearlessparents.com. Or see me.
Outstanding,
on
Facebook, man. Awesome. Loved having you on the show, brother. And, you know, you're doing some amazing work. And
so much.
You're a heck of a speaker. And, you know, I'm just honored to be a part of what you're doing in the world, man.
I'm honored to be on your show. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And I got to say, the mission, the values that you hold dear, it is just totally in alignment with everything that I do. And thank you so much. So a pleasure.
Absolutely, man. Awesome. So Life Transformation Radio listeners, another amazing guest, another amazing episode. If anything resonated with you, check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, the Google Play Music app. You can subscribe to our show, Life Transformation Radio. Never miss an episode. The guests are incredible, and there's so much that we've learned today about parenting, which I think is really super near and dear to a lot of our hearts. So if anything resonated with you, look us up on any of those platforms, subscribe to the show, send us comments, rate and review the show. I would love you know, reading comments and reading the reviews that people post. It's amazing. So as we close the show, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call that living your brand. So until next episode, have a great night.